Hi, Peter. What's happening? We need to talk about your TPS reports.
This is being recorded? I'm leaving.
I'm out of here.
My computer just gave me a very ominous warning.
Bum, bum, bum.
Welcome. Your mother's going
to
hear this.
Welcome to the first ever episode of Blurring the Beers.
Mm.
I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and joining me for the first time ever, my co-hosts, Adam Bell and Scott Wilsey. Gentlemen, Adam, Scott, welcome.
Hello, Peter.
You kind of hissed at us there, and I got scared.
I did kind of hiss just a little bit, but it was an intro hiss. So, wow. So this is historic, right? So Adam and I have been recording Blurring the Lines for
decades,
years now. Not decades, but years. And Scott and I first recorded our first podcast together back in 2004. So
approaching a decade,
more than a decade, almost two.
Oh, well, it's for people who aren't good at math.
Yeah,
that's true. In other words, Peter and I,
if you have a GED, we're approaching a decade.
It's for the fifth, third bankers.
Peter, you just lost the huge GED crowd.
That might cut into our tens of listeners. So, gentlemen, welcome. So this is Blurring the Lines, Blurring the Beers, Beering the Lines, whatever you want to call it, a dual episode. And two really good friends of mine, whom I have met in person, Adam, a handful of times, Scott, only once. But physically, approximation, I think I've spent about the same amount of time with both of you. And I think I've probably spent a comparable amount of time with each of you over internet correspondences. So you both feel pretty comparable in the level of exposure that I've had to both of you. Plus, you're both taller than me. So there's more of each of you to expose.
Two things. Number one, I've tried not to expose myself to you. And number two, you got to tell us who you hugged more when you saw them in person. Where's there been more hugging?
I think it's been comparable, and that leads to a comparable amount of exposure. I'm just saying.
It was fully clothed hugging.
Fully clothed hugging. But before we go any further, gentlemen, we should introduce our beers for tonight.
See, I have to run downstairs and get mine.
Well, while you're doing that, Adam, tell us what you're drinking.
Mm-hmm. So I had to get a local beer. So I have Tennessee Sipper, which is a Golden Light. It is made by East Nashville Beer Works. So eastnashbeerworks.com.
So, sounds good.
Yeah. So it's a lighter ale. It's only 4.5% alcohol.
Okay. I predict that I will be drunk under the table real soon, because I am also drinking a local beer, but by that I mean local to where I grew up, not to where I'm now.
Okay.
I am drinking Burlington Beer Company's Mochaccino.
Ooh.
Burlington Beer Company, as in Burlington, Vermont, not Burlington, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
This is a blonde milk stout with chocolate, coffee, vanilla, and milk sugar.
Oh.
And the folks, my fine, friendly brewmasters over at Omegang Breweries, you guys have some strong competition, because I believe this may very well be my favorite beer.
Uh-oh, that's saying a lot.
It is saying a lot. It's a 7%. So it's a little stronger than the stuff I've been drinking normally, but it's not as strong as the 9.7% Three Philosophers Belgian Quad made by Omegang. So
a little beer education, since we're on the topic.
Well, you're a brewer yourself, Adam, and I think you've brewed more beer than the rest of us. So tell us.
So why did they state that it had milk sugar?
Because lactose is not digestible by yeast, leaves the sugar in it, which makes it sweeter.
You are a winner and you listened.
And it makes it deliciouser.
Yeah.
So Scott, what are you drinking?
I have a Left Hand Brewing
Nitro Milk Stout.
Yeah, Milk Stout Nitro. And I got to tell you, I can taste the milk in this. I really can. Mm-hmm. It's very smooth. I really like it.
So it's funny. We're both, I don't know if you caught it because you were getting yours, but I'm also drinking a milk stout, but it's a blonde milk stout.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and ironically, I almost chose a nitro stout.
Well, I say we drink to that. So first, so gentlemen, when you're ready, I say cheers.
Salud.
Scott's still pouring. Jeez.
I'm still pouring. Yeah, I know.
Well, that's pretty good.
So this is a Colorado beer. Normally, I'm pretty much on the West Coast, not necessarily intentionally, but there's a lot of good West Coast beers in the stores here. But this is a Colorado.
This is so smooth. It tastes like coffee and like chocolate and like milk and like beer.
You just described mine. You just described my beer.
Yeah. Except this one's better. I've had that one and I like it.
Uh-huh.
This one's better.
Okay. Where can I get that one?
You can't right now. That's the thing. It's a very small batch, very small brewery. Supposedly, they may do one more run this year and that'll be in late March.
Okay. And you're going to ship me some, I hear.
I will try if I can get myself some. That's the first step.
You may have to drive it out there because it may be illegal to ship. There's so weird laws.
Really?
Yeah. Well, now that I finally have a car back after an entire month not having my car.
You got your dad's Ford van back?
Oh, God, don't go there.
Adam, your timing was pretty good because you were actually celebrating the fact that he got his car back, whereas just a day ago, you would have been rubbing it in that he hadn't.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, you don't have a car. Yeah. No. Yeah. So Tesla had my car in the shop for a month. A whole month.
But see, we're not surprised. You're the only one here who seems surprised.
Well, it goes to the fact that like we here in the United States are used to having everything just in time on demand.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
And flown in by drone. Yeah.
It really is a first world problem. And that's the whole, you know, this whole thing with supply chain stuff. When I talk with my friends abroad, they're like, oh yeah, that's pretty normal here.
Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah. You know? So, and I didn't really think about that because, you know, I haven't been really putting a ton of angst into supply chain shortages because it doesn't help. But I have had to try to plan around them from time to time. And one of my largest clients who still buys computers and computer supplies for me, been on his case now for like a year telling them, you guys need to stock some things, even if it's just like one or two laptops. And it's always, we need something right now. We need something right now. We need something right now. I'm buying and reselling refurbished computers for the first time, like ever. Or at least for the first time in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they're happy with them, you know. Yeah. But I'm like, as long as you're happy with them, there's like, you know, a very, very small window of warranty on these. And they're not cheap. So the price of stuff is, you know, it's kind of surprising. It's to the point, actually, where I've been thinking, should I sell my Tesla Model S and trade it in for something else, like a Model Y or maybe a non-Tesla even? I don't know.
Oh,
I was going to say something where you might be able to take it to an actual dealer, but that would put out the Tesla Y.
Well, if I take it to the only dealer I could take it to would probably be a Tesla dealer, and they're not going to give me much for it.
Look, I am not here to praise dealers because in general, dealerships are...
Praise the dealer.
Well, they're not only a mixed bag, but they're always trying to get money out of you when you take a car in for service. They're trying to convince you to spend $1,000 on something. But, but at least most car manufacturers have a network in place where you can take your vehicle. You can get an estimate of how long it's going to take. It's probably not going to take a month, no matter what it is. And there are some benefits to that. And I don't understand. Tesla doesn't have to go that far, but I don't understand why they don't make it closer to that experience. I mean, they've sold a lot of cars now. I see them everywhere. It's not like these are still niche products.
Yep. No, they definitely, Tesla is doing some serious damage in the auto market. And I was like, when I first heard today, yesterday I heard, I forget who it was, some major manufacturer announced plans. They're going to be like rolling out all these new hybrid and electric models. And they said, though, that one of the concerns they have is Tesla, who has emerged as a serious competitor. And what I was fearing, I guess, as an owner of Tesla, I was fearing that Ford is going to just come out, Ford, Chevy, BMW, whatever, Volkswagen will come out and just like, oh, we can do that too. Squash. But apparently it's not that easy. So maybe my Tesla supercharging network will stick around for some time.
Well, it's not only not that easy, those other car manufacturers are used to selling in volumes that Tesla could only dream of. And so they have to be careful. And that's why they're all like Ford and Chevy so far. The only electric vehicles they've talked about are either SUVs or trucks, right? I mean, there's that Mustang thing, but it's basically a crossover.
And there was the Volt.
Yeah, right.
That was little junky cars.
But all the new stuff that they're doing now are trucks, basically. Right.
Yeah, America.
So Tesla doesn't really have to worry about that because, I mean, well...
What about the Cybertruck?
I was going to say in the long run, I don't see the market going that way, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm 1,000% wrong. Maybe it's always going to be trucks.
I mean, Mad Max, did they have a lot of trucks in that?
I don't know.
They had one big one.
Yeah.
There you go.
And go-karts. The rest of them were pipe buggies.
Go-karts. Have you ever ridden electric go-karts?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so there are two go-kart racing arenas near me, you know, within like a 30-minute drive from my place. One of them is F1 something something, and the other one is K1 something something. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, F1 are little gas-powered go-karts, you know, like 20-seater mm-hmm. type things, and the K1 are electric. And back in 2019, I went and did the K1, the little electric guys, and it was fun. And I was kind of surprised at, see, when I get into my Tesla and I stomp on the, even when I have it in chill mode, the acceleration is insane. Mm-hmm. And when I put it into standard mode, the acceleration is even more insane. Now, I don't have like sport mode or ludicrous mode or plaid mode or insane mode, right?
What do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart?
I don't have those. But these little go-karts, they accelerated so much faster than my Tesla. Those were ludicrous mode. But it was fun. You know, it was a lot of fun. So if you ever have the option to do a little go-kart racing, it's pretty cool.
They also weigh about 5,000 pounds less than your Tesla. So
give or take, but they also have like about 2,000 pounds less battery.
Uh-oh, you just went dark.
My Dyne DNS updater felt compelled to try to update my DNS hostname IP address right then and there.
Okay.
Well, before we leave the supply chain topic and automobiles, so we're in the market to buy a vehicle, and we looked at Toyota 4Runners, and in order to buy a Toyota 4Runner, you pay either $5,000 to $10,000 above MSRP. Mm-hmm. To order it. I'm like, oh, okay. So then I have $5,000 to $10,000 down on my new 4Runner. Well, no, that's for the privilege of getting that 4Runner that you want.
You know, even Elon puts your deposit toward the price of the car.
So I said, no. I mean, and this was above MSRP. So this wasn't like we made a deal. This was like, no, this is the sticker price. And these are the associated fees with buying it. So, of course, I walked away and I've gone to Ford and went to the Ford Explorer. And we're looking at Blazers, too. But Ford has pretty much, they had two Explorers on site and they were already purchased. So the only thing, well, no, one was for sale. You could buy that one, but the only way that they're doing it now is you pre-order what you want. You put $500 down, which does go towards the vehicle. I mean, you're still going to pay essentially sticker price because they can right now on the demand, but you get exactly what you want. I don't hate that concept of I go to the car dealership. They don't have to try to shoehorn me into something on the lot that I don't really want, that's in a color that I don't want, that doesn't have the features that I want. I go in, I pick my list, we pick all of our accessories, we shake hands and walk away, and I come back 12 weeks later with the car exactly the way that I wanted it.
Yeah, that's true. It's different here, or at least maybe it's only different because we've been looking at Hondas. I want to get an Accord hybrid. And they have them on the lot. They don't have a lot, but they can get them for you. And they're not super bad prices either. They're not MSRP. They're pretty close. There's not going to be any deals. But I'm surprised that they're not over MSRP because a lot of other ones are, like you were saying.
Yeah.
But the Toyota, I'm just guessing Toyota 4Runners have always been so popular, and I'm guessing now they're just insanely popular. I mean, no one can get... I'm guessing there's a huge demand of people that cannot get their Toyota 4Runner.
Yeah. Consider it a Tesla Model X. or maybe a used Tesla Model S. Adam, yeah. I know a guy.
See, it's got to cross a creek.
How fast?
It really doesn't matter how fast, but it's just got to get across.
It does matter if there's a ramp.
It does have some pretty good torque.
If there's a ramp, I've seen pictures. We got to find this. There is a video. It's like a security camera where someone caught a Tesla jumping railroad tracks.
Nice.
Yes. I don't know how far it went after it completed the jump, but it was pretty entertaining.
Well, my creek is Tennessee Chert, which is a limestone-like rock, limestone, sandstone, cherty rock. Tiny pebbles to big pebbles. And if you take my truck, my four-wheel drive truck with highway tires, I cannot cross that creek. I've got to have off-road tires to cross the creek.
Right, right. But what you're talking about is driving through the creek. You're talking about
flying.
Jumping over the creek. Dukes of Hazzard style.
But how many times can we pull that off?
At least once.
As many as you want, because what I learned is when the car comes down and the frame starts bending, it immediately goes back to normal. Yeah. It's just a miracle.
Yeah. Just a miracle. Either of you guys see Ghostbusters Afterlife?
No.
No, that's the latest one, right?
Yeah. Are you familiar with the original Ghostbusters movie?
Yes. Okay. I've seen all of them up to this one.
All two of them?
There was... The Ghostbusters with the women from Saturday Night Live.
Right. Doesn't count. That never happened.
What? You didn't like
it? It was hilarious.
That was a good movie.
If you're not a purist, if you're like, I mean, it's Ghostbusters. How pure can it be?
Right. It's a remix. It was a good movie. I liked it.
Yeah. I thought it was fun. And I mean, Chris, what's his name, was hilarious.
Was Hemsworth, yes.
Yeah, Chris Hemsworth.
It was funny.
What were they kept saying? He's so dumb, but so beautiful or something.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It should have been so much better. It really should have. I had high hopes, and I'm not at all dissing the actors.
Are you sure nostalgia, this isn't a toxic impulse? Because here's the thing. When I go back and watch the original one, I'm going, this is good, but man, I remembered it was so much better.
It was better when we were 13.
Right.
It was better when we were 13. Now, that said, all that said, Ghostbusters Afterlife, off the charts, better than all the other movies, even if you count the 2016 version. So much better. Gave me, I definitely was tearing up towards the end, not just in the theaters the first time I saw it, but the second time when I watched it at home again too. So
just like really, Titanic,
it really hit me. Not at all the same thing.
By the way, you're wrong, Peter. This is the fourth and final film in the Ghostbusters franchise. There was a 1989 Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah, there was Ghostbusters 2, right?
Mm-hmm. No, but there was what a 1989 was the one... Ghostbusters 2. Oh, that you're denying. You're a denier. Yeah.
I'm denying 2016. That never happened.
Yes. He's denying number three. And it had everybody except Egon, which is he's deceased.
He's passed away. Mm-hmm. Yes. But they paid homage to him and honored the character. And I think Harold Ramis very well as well in the movie, in Ghostbusters Afterlife.
Yeah. Because everybody loved him.
Yeah. So absolutely. You know, it was just spot on. There's always room for a little bit of improvement, but you know, I had no complaints except like I just wanted it to go on longer. You know, I take that back. I think it was slightly anticlimactic, but it was satisfying. You know, and if people, just like with Spider-Man No Way Home, they say, "Oh, it was fan service." Well, you know what? You're here to service the freaking fans. I'm the customer here, so give me what I want.
Yeah, to some degree. But then look what happened with Star Wars. They went back and forth on those last three trilogies where one guy did one thing, one guy tried to undo it, and the other guy did the other thing. And the first and the last ones were definitely just trying to recreate the original Star Wars. And yeah. I get it, but...
They did not... That, yes, I'm complete agreement with you, and that completely is not what happened here.
Yeah.
So, good news, Scott, is...
Yeah. Did you read the books, the Star Wars books?
I've read some. I read the original one. I don't remember which other ones I read.
Yeah, because my wife and I still swear that Rey and what's his name are really brother and sister, not Palpatine's daughter.
That would be the best, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Palpatine's daughter thing was like, why did you have to do that?
Dude, I don't... yeah, no.
Because it looked like they were going away from the midichlorian thing of you have to inherit the Force.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Right, and then they went right back to it because the only people with Force are all from this one family line, or these two families, however you
want. Royal family. It's how power goes. The power gets Force
family. Yeah.
Force family, exactly.
I could have done without the midichlorians. That they should have never been introduced.
No, no.
Nope. Don't know what they were thinking. Oh, brother.
Besides, if it was something that just floated around in your blood, that would be, you could think you would be able to synthesize that, and it just gave everybody a Force vaccine, and they could have the Force.
Or transfusion. Maybe if it was contagious.
That's true.
You know, what if you could like contract the Force? You know, what if you...
Especially if you didn't care if the donor lived or not.
Oh man, I'm coming down with a case of the Force. And then he stands up and his eyes are glowing and power.
Lightning bolts are shooting out his fingers.
Exactly. See, that would be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
Nice.
All right. What else? What else is on the agenda, gentlemen? How's your beer so far, by the way?
Mine's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. What was your alcohol percentage?
6%.
He's already down to 6. I'm pacing myself with my 7.
Well, see, I'm still got 1, and I'm going to stick with 1 because I'm conditioning myself for the drive to the farm this evening.
Ah.
You notice throwback to last episode?
Throwback. Got that. I am going to brave the grocery store after this.
It was sad.
I know I'm going to regret.
Peter, last time we did a Friends with Beer, you immediately started shopping. It was on your phone, but still.
Mm-hmm.
I've already got the shopping list. It's already made. So everything I want is great. And then I said, great, let's see when the next delivery window is. And they said, Sunday.
So we need some pictures of shopping with the Nor'easter.
Shopping within, you mean like pre-Nor'easter, right? Because I'm not going out in snow. That's coming tonight at midnight, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So.
What are you expecting? Feet of snow?
Mm-hmm. So I've been told.
What about you, Adam? Are you clear in the weather department?
Yeah, we've got a dusting on the ground. We're not actually supposed to have gotten anything. So it'll be cold. It'll be clear. I'm headed out tonight. Should be nothing on the ground. Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. And besides, it'll probably melt in what, 5 minutes?
Well, no, it's cold here. I know cold relative to Boston is not cold, but it's still cold here for us.
Today, when I went out for my run, it was like 30 degrees and it felt positively balmy. I didn't need to wear my outer windbreaker layer for the first time in a week.
I was going to say, that's warmer than it's been here lately, but
yeah.
31. It's 31 right now. So
31. Wow. Same temperature here.
Slight.
Today is super warm. Today it's 52 right now and it feels like summer.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would kill for that weather. Who do you want me to kill? I will kill someone. Give me that weather.
A long list.
Yes.
Should I tell you before or after you kill them that it probably won't change your weather?
After.
All right. I've got a podcast app question. Which app do you guys use?
Overcast.
We both use Overcast, yeah.
I thought Overcast was for libraries and stuff.
No.
Overdrive.
Oh, okay. So
now, Scott, you experiment a lot, though. Not anymore.
I've just been using Overcast for years.
Okay. But a few years ago, I know you had spent a lot of time in Pocket Casts and Castro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the only other two I remember.
Those are the only other two, yeah.
I used Pocket Casts for one reason, in that they have a native Sonos app.
Yeah.
And that was nice, not having to AirPlay stuff to my Sonos.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, the bonus features, you know, just like the usability of Overcast and the way it works, drew me back to that. And I eventually even removed Pocket Casts off of my Sonos. I don't use that.
Yeah. Also, if you use the smart speed, which strips silence a little bit, not completely.
Oh, yeah.
But, yep. Or if you speed it up, Marco's sound quality is better than any of the other ones.
I concur. Yep.
He's done his own custom audio processing and it just sounds better.
I agree. Almost everything that I listen to, unless I'm listening to something where I want to hear the pauses and, you know, and if something where making it go fast doesn't, when I'm normally consuming security podcasts, the news, the latest in technology, give it to me as fast as I can process it. I'll take it. But if I'm listening to a fictional audiobook or something like that, then I want to hear it as it was intended to be, you know, especially if it is being read by William Shatner.
Fighting with a stick. Bum, 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 bum,
bum. Oh, no, he didn't fight with a stick. He did the patented double knuckle.
Well, he did both. No, they had stick fights.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. He did stick fighting, but the patented double knuckle guaranteed to break your fingers attack, you know?
Yeah, because I was, the reason I asked was I was using the Apple Podcast app. And typically when I listen to it, I turn it on and I listen the whole way through. Mm-hmm. And I was actually listening to your podcast. I was like, well, if we're all going to be together, I should at least listen to what the last episode was just cause.
That was when Peter went off the rails.
Yeah. And, you know, I listened to it and then I stopped because I, you know, had other things to do and I came back and it was gone. I'm like, oh, well, I must have killed it. And then I came back and turned it back on, got to where I was before and listened to it. And then I went into the grocery, came back. It was gone again. I'm like, all right, this sucks.
the Apple Podcast app leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah. See, I have the opposite problem. I keep trying to get rid of stuff I listen to. And then when I look in my library again, it's in there.
Yeah.
I don't use that app a lot, but it's, I don't know. It has a weird UI. It's hard to tell what they think is a library, like what you're subscribed to versus what you've just been listening to, stuff like that. It's a little weird.
It's insane. Yeah, I remember I used it a little bit when it first came out. And then I tried it again when they announced compatibility with Amazon devices. You can subscribe to Apple Podcasts on Amazon stuff now, just like I was doing with Pocket Casts. Mm-hmm. But still, just as like, I don't understand. I don't think Apple understands podcasts.
Well, you know what is sad about Apple?
Where do we begin?
When I went back to using the Mac again, they had really good built-in software. It was easy to understand, and it was worth mentioning that it came with a computer. Like, it was a bonus. And over the years, this company that's supposedly known for its great UIs, they make horrible software. Their UIs are terrible. They often start software and then just abandon it. Like, they'll make one iteration, and you're like, man, I can't wait to see where this goes. And then it never goes anywhere again.
Oh, like Cisco.
And Microsoft.
I don't know if they're that bad.
I disagree with Microsoft. Microsoft, they iterate a lot, but Cisco is...
One difference I can think of between Cisco and Apple is at least Apple didn't let all the intelligence communities of the world in their back door.
Yeah, but that's not because of like iterating failure features.
No. Not at all. In fact, you could say maybe Cisco was only iterating that feature. Who knows?
I think it's hilarious that Cisco loves to, they're like, when you talk to Cisco salespeople, they love to talk about the virtues of buying from one vendor. Mm-hmm. They're like, would you buy an airplane made by 32 different vendors and stuff? But we're like, dude, that's exactly what you are. That literally is what Cisco is. They just buy up things and then they tout all this integration and you never see it. And it's just like, wow.
I know we still use a lot of Cisco, but I think that in general, has their market share gone down, or is there just so much need now that they still have the same market share, but other people's have grown? Because I think...
What market are we talking about?
Whatever, corporate, whatever.
Well, it's the thing is they're so diversified now that, you know, they're not just like network hardware now. They're security, they're security services, endpoint protection, they're, you know, they're all kinds of stuff. They're everywhere.
So my major gripe is I wish that I could make people work so hard to pay me for something that I sell as they make me work to buy a Cisco product. I've got money in my hand. I want to give it to you.
Take my money. Please shut up and take my money.
Give me this Meraki. No. Well, okay. Well, you got to register a deal. No, I don't want to register a deal. I'm buying this. I'm not registering a deal. It's not a deal. I'm paying for it.
We'll charge you three times as much, and then you can buy it retail from this reseller. No, no, I'm a reseller.
I'm a Cisco reseller, please.
Huh. Wow, that is weird. Why? I wonder how that works for them.
It's awful.
It weeds out the little guys like us, and it leaves only the Ingram Micros to survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I bought $3,000 firewalls from them, and if I make the purchase, I have to wait for them to approve my purchase. They've got to approve that I have the ability to buy from them. I want that for my business.
I think the fact that they put it on sale should be an automatic approval of anybody buying their product.
We've got this. I'll give you a note that says that I can buy this firewall.
A permission slip.
This presidential permission slip, and sometimes Hamilton, not a president, will give me permission to buy this.
Can I have a note from your doctor saying that you're qualified? You must be this tall to buy this firewall.
Oh, yeah. Please just let me buy it.
That's too bad. I can't send my cat to make my networking purchases for me then, Peter.
Speaking of dealing with giant corporations and being the little guy who gets squashed in the middle. Now, in hindsight, this was not as bad, but it was as frustrating. So I think both of you remember that last July, I terminated my Verizon agreement and I went back to AT&T. Mm-hmm. And it took me exactly 6 hours to remember how much I hated AT&T and why I had left them, right?
6 hours.
That's he didn't pick up his phone for 6 hours after that.
He slept.
Yeah. I had no signal. I had no idea I was missing all the stuff for 6 hours. So the reason I went with AT&T is because Verizon back in 2019, I remember I had switched to them. I had been on AT&T for like 3 years because I was able to wrangle a deal through the hospital, you know, the employee discount thing. And I was like, do you have an email from an address? I'm like, yes, great. You're an employee. I'm like, good enough. I'll take it. And they gave me a discount and I took it. And for the longest time I had, well, for not the longest time, but for 3 years, had my father and myself, both of our phones on there because I pay for my dad's phone. He won't pay for a cell phone, but he's really happy when he has one, when he needs one in an emergency. So fine. So after that time went, when I switched and was employed at Mimecast for a little while, they had a deal with Verizon. I was like, well, great. Now's the time to switch. And their onboarding process is so convoluted that even the salespeople didn't know what they were selling me. Because I firmly believe that they were not intentionally trying to screw me over, but I got screwed over paying a lot more money than I expected to for a lot more, lot less in services. Mm. So I stuck with it for a little while, begrudgingly. And then in August of last year, or July of last year, I was like, I've had enough because AT&T sent me this offer. And they're like, we'll give you 100 gigs of data and HBO Max and I think Spotify or, you know, something for pretty much the same price I was paying for Verizon. And I was like, I'm sold, you know, because I can use Spotify. It's not my favorite streaming service. I mean, selection wise it is, but I prefer Apple because I stream to it, you know, and then I will use, you know, HBO Max. Yeah. There's stuff that I will watch on it. I'm not paying for it out of pocket, but I will watch it. So, okay, fine. Less than a month later, I was like, I've had enough of this garbage. And, you know, because AT&T completely botched the transfer process. And, oh, wait, you have an Apple Watch? Yeah, that's actually going to be like $30 a month, not $10 a month.
Really?
Because of this fee and that fee and this add-on and all this kind of garbage just spiraled out of control. And I was like, enough of this. And then Verizon sends me a thing in the mail saying, dear Verizon Fios customer, did you know if you switch to Verizon Wireless, you might save $50 a month on your Fios bill? I'm like, I am a Fios customer. Tell me more. And so now suddenly, whereas Verizon had previously been giving me a whopping 6 gigabytes of data per month, and recall AT&T was giving me 100 for like the same price. That was a big compelling move to switch, because every month I get near like 5-6 gigabytes and I'm like, oh, better not send that email because I might go over my limit and whatnot. So I switched. I was like, I can breathe again. Verizon comes back and they're like, well, we'll give you 75 gigs plus 30 gigs of hotspot plus Disney Plus and Apple Music, all for about the same price as you're paying AT&T. And I was like, you know what? As bad as you were, Verizon, you're not as bad as AT&T, so I'll switch back. Now, of course, as soon as they heard that, they did their best to royally screw up the transfer. They ported my number, and I know listeners who remember and have heard both of our episodes have heard the story before. Maybe the hosts even remember it. But while I was on the call with the Verizon rep, she ported my number away from AT&T. While I was on the call from an AT&T phone, she ported the number, and boom, phone call dies right there. And I was just like, but one of the promises they gave me was like, hey, Apple Music and Disney Plus, that's great. And what they told me was, your Disney Plus subscription will be paused and we will be paying for it for as long as you're a Verizon customer on this plan. Now, when you cancel your Verizon plan, your existing Disney Plus subscription will resume. Missing invisible asterisk.
I was going to say, what's the catch here?
The catch is none of that is true.
I thought maybe you had to, like, if you ever changed away, you had to pay everything that they paid for your account.
Oh, if only it was that simple, Adam. No, really what it was, oh, wait, you're an annual subscriber? Tough. So only like last month, and I had no way of validating this. How do I tell that I'm not being billed for a service, right? I'm not getting a bill. Well, guess what? I wasn't getting a bill to begin with because I paid for it in February.
How did you not know you weren't getting billed, Peter?
Oh, I know, right? So about 5 days ago, I get an email from Apple saying, just so you know, we're going to bill you again for your Disney Plus subscription in a month. And well, I was like,
courteous.
That was courteous, but it shouldn't be happening because that's supposed to be paused. So today I had the displeasure of speaking to Apple and Disney Plus and Verizon customer service.
I don't think subscriptions that you do as an in-app purchase, assuming that's how you did it, I don't think Verizon has any control over those.
They don't.
You have to stop that yourself.
Except you can't, because Apple only goes back 60 days. And I bought it in February and I switched to Verizon in August.
Right. Once your term...
Exactly. So essentially, I was sold a bill of goods because I could not take advantage of this because I was an annual subscriber.
Yeah.
Trying to save like what, $10 a year or something?
Did Verizon know this?
They made no mention of if you're an annual subscriber. They're like, we will magically pause your subscription. But they also never said anything asterisk, unless you bought this through Apple. Because we have no relationship directly with them. You got to talk with Disney Plus.
Right. Yeah.
So essentially today, and I realize, okay, I get it. I understand it. I should have known it was too good to be true from the get-go.
Well, it's not too good to be true if you weren't already a subscriber.
It was too good to be true for the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. It will be true about a month from now.
Mm-hmm. How much money are you going to save total?
Well, from... a month from now, I'll start beginning get Disney Plus for free. So whatever the annual or monthly cost of Disney Plus is, okay. I'll start again.
What's it like?
The downside
$4.95 per month.
It's more than that.
It's more like $8 now.
No, it's like $8 a month now. It's like $7.99 a month.
And don't let them listen to what I'm paying.
Okay.
But you might be grandfathered in somehow. Yours include Hulu and ESPN?
I have Hulu and ESPN from DirecTV AT&T purchase.
Which is hilarious because normally that's a Time Warner thing where you would be getting HBO as opposed to Disney stuff.
Right? And now I get HBO Max on top of that for free.
Really?
You're winning. Yeah, wow. I want your plan. So, in a nutshell, I am getting what I paid for starting next month, but it was just like, it didn't kick in August, September, October, November, December, January, February for 7 months. So I paid for Disney Plus, where had I known I could do that, I should have just stuck with the month-to-month plan. But I was like, oh, the price is going up. Well, I'm going to need this service because I love all the Marvel stuff. So I will pay for this for a year in advance. Shouldn't have done that. That was the lesson.
During that 7 months, you almost could have had a Tesla repaired.
Almost.
Almost. Woo. Okay. Am I the only one who's feeling his beer? So yeah. Scott, you are 6 foot. How much?
6 foot. But I also just ate because I hadn't had a chance to eat all day. So while I was in my 1 o'clock meeting, I was stuffing my face. So I just ate.
So you're 6 foot tall, drinking a 6% alcohol. Yeah. Adam, you're 6 foot.
6'1" with a 4.5% alcohol.
With a 4. And I'm 5'10", drinking a 7.
Yeah. I had 16 fluid ounces.
I am wobbly. Yeah, we all... Now, Scott, was...
Oh, no, this was 12. A 12. Yeah.
Yeah.
This was 12.
Okay, so you're getting off lucky that, well, both of you guys. So you've, Adam, you've got more, but lower ABV. Scott, you have less, but higher ABV. Uh-huh. I have a pint of 7%, and I'm smaller than both of you.
I'll take a pint.
Ooh.
So
I feel it.
Let's talk about beer for a second. So one of the things is in here, you're talking about the IPA.
Yeah.
So I want, and I know your feelings on IPA, but I think IPA is the beer for COVID.
Why?
Because you can't taste anything. So, but if you want to taste something, it's got to be a crappy beer like an IPA with way too much green stuff in it. And now you have a beer that you can taste. So it's the perfect COVID beer.
I love it. A beer for every season.
I can see the disgust in your eyes.
COVID season.
What I'm thinking is I really need to find somebody who has COVID and has that symptom of not being able to taste anything so I can force some IPA down them and see what it tastes like to them.
They won't care. They'll be like, this tastes great.
So a friend of mine, she's not affected by COVID. She was affected by actually cancer, but in her throat and lost her taste. And she says she likes IPAs now because they actually taste like something because it's so strong, but she can't taste any good beer. It's just like Alka-Seltzer.
Wow.
Oh,
that's terrible.
Without the grit.
Oh, I don't actually use Alka-Seltzer when I would normally use Alka-Seltzer, or I can't even say Alka-Seltzer.
I was just noticing.
Alker.
I am a pint down. I cannot taste, nor can I say Alka-Seltzer.
See, this is where I might need my soundboard, because I could record the word Alka-Seltzer for you, and every time you wanted it said, you could just point at me.
I cannot say...
Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer. That's so weird. Who would have thought that would be the words that I cannot pronounce? I usually just use like a half teaspoon of baking soda.
Are you sure you're going to the grocery store, Peter?
Not immediately.
He could walk or take it. Well, no, you don't get Uber credits anymore.
That's not true. My Uber credits go until January 30th. So I can call a Yukon and stuff the back of that thing with bags of groceries.
The problem is when the guy pulls up in the Yukon to pick you up, he's going to be like, I don't see any Peter guy, but who's that guy laying in the ditch over there?
There's a dude down.
Well, one of the things, and again, I don't use Uber. And as soon as it's not free, I delete the app and, you know, screw them.
So they can't track you.
But one of the things that their app has that I don't know if Lyft has is
Lyft. All they do is curse at you and sass you the whole way to your destination.
When your driver is getting close, there's a button that you can press, which shows colors. It just turns the screen like a flashing color, and so that way your driver knows to look for you. Mm-hmm. So presumably it's going to be like a different color. So if they're like 5 different people all waiting for an Uber on the same block, that your driver can say, oh, I'm here for you.
It's the red guy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The white guy, the blue guy. So it's been pretty good. And I gotta say, when I realized that like I had like a $500 credit on Uber, I was like, why wouldn't I call Uber Black? It is a much better experience when you're calling professional limo drivers who drive for a living than some rando
who
like, I know they say that he has his license, but does he really? Because he sure as hell isn't driving like it.
Yeah. You get in, he says, hang on a second. Yeah.
Yeah. Let
me get off the phone. Exactly. Is this you?
I had someone pick me up, take me to the airport. This was years ago. Adam, it might have been the last time I went to see you. I don't remember. But someone who like was really not good at driving. And it was like her first day driving for Lyft. And she told me, and I was just like, I was like, how did you get the idea that it would be a good for you to drive? Like, well, anyone can drive for Lyft. I went, The presupposition there is that you can drive. Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, guys, I'm feeling my beer. How are you? You're probably not feeling anything.
No, I'm not feeling my mine's empty and it's way over here, so I can't feel it. There, now I can feel the bottle, but just the bottle.
You gotta see if you can drip a couple of drips out and if you can feel that. Oh, look, see, I would have felt that.
Yeah, that was more than a drip.
Or maybe I wouldn't have felt it.
It's a tiny swirl left here.
Mm-hmm. This is good. So, Scott. Definitely beer rating this.
Okay.
Vermont, Burlington Beer Company, Mochaccino. That gets a thumbs up.
Yeah, I need to get that rating. I've got some of the back end work that I need to do done, and I need to work on the UI. But I will have, not only will I have thumbs up and thumbs down, but I will have little quotes from us on each beer page.
Not only is it a beer.
It is a beer.
It is a good beer.
Okay.
Yes. So I just want to make a note. And I think we're going to keep it with that. It's either going to be this or this, mm-hmm. right? We're not going to do like 4.5 stars or not like the old, you remember the mymac.com days when it was just like mymac.com rating of 8.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
No stars.
Yeah.
No stars. But it was like 8 out of 10. Like, how did you come to that point? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. Just, wait. Hold on.
Yeah, because then you get into, if you give away your 10 right away, what if you have a better beer? You can't, becomes a, because then you have to go back and revisit all your ratings. Ooh.
Nice.
So I, Dungeons and Dragons
10 thing? Out of 10 for this beer. Perfect.
See, I thought about drink. So I make a chocolate cherry porter.
Ooh.
And my last...
We're both headed to your house right now, Adam.
my last batch I made in 2016, mm-hmm. and I think I have one left, and it's in a pint Grolsch top. And by now, there's no carbonation whatsoever. But that doesn't matter. It is still really good. And I thought about drinking that one for this episode, but I was like, well, maybe... We'll see how it goes, and maybe we'll do a second episode, and I'll drink that one.
And then you thought, no, I want to drink that on a happy occasion.
Yeah. I'll drink it. But I need to make another batch of that, though.
Well, I was going to ask you, how many batches have you made? Like, if it goes that long,
mm-hmm.
can you still churn it out exactly the same as it was before?
Yeah, because I've got a recipe. I mean, I follow the same recipe for it every time.
Adam is pretty good when it comes to consistency in the brewing, at least so I'm told, because frankly I've never had any of your beers. But we have exchanged many stories about how I'm really just like winging it, throwing crap at the wall, seeing Peter what sticks,
says, I think I want to do this. I'm like, Peter, I think you should follow the recipe the very first time, but no.
He wants to be a master before he's a student.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Nobody got time. Yeah, it takes 6 weeks. That's 6 weeks of my life I'm never going to get back. I need to try this.
Oh, man. There was years ago, a coworker brought some homemade beer that he brewed to a company or a group picnic, and our boss was there, and I don't know what on earth possessed him to give some of that beer to the boss, but it tasted like formaldehyde. And I was like, dude, that was a career ender. That you've got to hope the boss leaves before you do, because
I've had very little failure when it comes to beer As far as like making them, I had a batch early on that I wasn't doing a proper sanitation, and I figured out it was actually, I was washing my bottles in the dishwasher, but what I didn't realize is there's a good bit of sediment in the bottom that wasn't getting cleaned out.
Oh.
And that was causing bad taste in my other beers. And when I discovered that, I've never had that problem again. But the last time I had a problem was I had a really slow yeast. And so I thought I was done, and I bottled all these beer, and I bought a pint and a half bottles, and I put champagne tops on them, and I gave them away as gifts.
You destroyed everyone's houses.
Yes, my neighbor, I gave him some of my beer, and he opened it and went poop.
Oh my God.
And his entire kitchen was covered in a very awesome overcarbonated nut brown ale.
Oh no.
So it was a failure in bottling too early, which I'd never really done that. That was the only time that ever happened. But the beer was good. You get this much beer and this much head.
So it's funny. So you said, well, was that a nut brown, chestnut brown, the thing that exploded?
Yeah, nut brown ale.
Because I made a brown ale that also exploded. Now, I did not use champagne bottles, of course, but I did do one.
Did you use slow yeast?
I don't know. But that was the first batch that I ever made that was like, wow, this is terrible. and it exploded. And this was back in the day there when I was, you know, very active in Krav Maga. And there was this one guy who was super annoying, super annoying to practice with. He would always be on everyone's case, even though he was no better than them. And he was like, he would hurt people because, like, well, you should have known to block that, you know, even though he was doing like full on punches and crap. And I opened this bottle completely unconsciously, subconsciously, unwittingly, put fill in the blank. I open up this, I pop the cap, and it spewed all over the back of his suede jacket. And I was just like, I could not have planned that better.
Why is the jacket wet, Margo? I don't know, Todd.
Oh, I love that. I don't know, Todd.
That was so fun. So that's anyway,
let me ask you a question, though. Why were you cracking open beer at Krav Maga to begin with?
It was a party. It was a Krav Maga party. It wasn't a Krav Maga, although there's a precedent for this. I am a big fan of a guy named Jeff Thompson, who is a former London bouncer. And also Jeff, G-E-O-F-F Thompson. He's written a ton of books, mostly about his experience, you know, being a bouncer. Start with one called Watch My Back. Can't speak anymore. I'm drunk. Good book. Watch My Back is pretty much his biography of getting into like the self-defense realm. He suggests in a number of different books, he's written like, I don't know, maybe like dozens of different books on self-defense stuff. And one of them, he talks about having a seminar or a session, a training session, where the participants drink alcohol. The teacher does not, right? So the teacher needs to be sober, and he needs to have veto power and be able to like call this at any time. But it's to impress upon the students, like, this is what happens when you drink. Just so you know, like if you're going to be out in a pub and you've had a pint of 7% mochaccino, like I have, and this guy over your shoulder is looking like a jerk and you feel like, oh, I can show him a thing or two. Reconsider that, you know,
it's so, not a good idea.
It's not a good idea, right? Oh, you know, so I always wanted to try that. I would be, you know, I thought that at our Krav school that it would be an interesting thing if just, you know, not like publicly announced, but hey, you know, most senior students, you, the second degree, first degree black belts who've been here like 5-10 years or so, we're doing something, I'm not publicizing it, Friday night. Just the five of us, you know, here's what you're going to do. You know, like go through a bunch of self-defense drills and then sit down, have a beer, talk a little bit, go through the same defense drills, see what happens. Things are a little different. Have another beer. See what happens. Getting a little sloppy. Have a third beer. Holy crap. There's three of these guys. No, there's really only one.
Which one are you going to swing for?
Which one? The one in the middle.
Well, maybe. Maybe you're way off calibration. So Apple Books has his audio book, but not his, not the regular book.
Okay. Is it Watch My Back?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a worth read. It's a short book. It's easy to digest. It's definitely worth reading, though. I like it. It was good. All right. Well, gentlemen, we've been going for about an hour or so. I mean, we got a little bit of a delayed start because technology.
Every time is the first time for podcasting.
And we didn't even talk. I've been spitting all of these things into our chat on Signal. Those were all intended to be topics for tonight. I don't think we got to any of those.
Probably not. We'll do it again.
Which means we should do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So guys, in all honesty, alcohol aside, I know I haven't physically spent a lot of time with you, jokes aside, but I do consider you two of my closest friends, and I really am sincerely grateful for the time I get to spend with you. And the fact that I get to spend it with both of you at the same time is just like, it's just so much fun. So thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. I mean that. That is not this thing talking. That's me talking. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Thanks, guys.
Peter, you've been friends with me for a long time, and I'm just grateful that you still are, because I figure if anybody can be my friend that long and still be that good of a friend, that guy's pretty special. And I really enjoy listening to your guys' podcast too, by the way. It is very cool.
I mean, you're probably our number one listener.
Yeah.
You know, we have tens of listeners, right?
Yeah.
Tens of dozens of tens of listeners.
Tens of free listeners.
Yeah. Tens of tens. I love it.
I wonder if we should stop making it for a paid for subscription.
Ooh.
I think we should just open it up. I mean, are we doing what is the podcast at a point where it can sustain itself and we don't need to charge for it anymore?
I'm just thinking that $100 a month is a little steep. Maybe consider
but it's worth it though, Scott. Well, it keeps the riffraff out.
Well, I guess they're all riffraff then.
Didn't you try to get a sponsorship from MeUndies.com or at one time?
I tried, I applied at one point. I had an Amazon referral link and that got pulled. I approached MeUndies. They're like, yeah, we'd like to talk to you. Nothing. All of these things that you've ever heard about on any podcast, they're like, nah, we don't have time for that.
See, in a security context, that's horrible, because then you're trying to keep people from breaking into your undies. And I don't know, it's weird.
All right. I don't know. Should I flip a coin to see which one of you guys takes us out? Or us in?
It has to be one of you guys, because you guys are the experts with the big red button.
Well, yeah. I mean, how do you guys end your podcast, though?
I don't know how we end Friends with Beer, because I'm usually drunk by then. Yeah,
there is no idea. Why do you ask him?
The button.
Here's the thing, Adam. I will give you a hint. When you're taking out Friends with Beer, you have to reference Friends Wabeer Pod on Twitter.
Yeah, Friends Wabeer Pod is the Twitter.
Friends Wabeer Pod Twitter.
Yes!
Usually it ends when we wake up and our hard drives are full of recorded audio.
Yeah. My computer stopped. Why did it stop again?
Hard drive full. We're out of disk space. Maybe you should delete some podcasts. So Adam, why don't you, now that you know where to find the Friends Wabeer Pod, why don't you take us out?
All right. Well, dear listener, we thank you for listening to us. I think we've been funny tonight. I've had a good time. So you can find us on the podcast. What's the URL? Friendswithbeer.com?
Yes.
It's not Friends with Beer. There's no podcast. Okay. So find you guys at friendswithbeer.com, and you can find us at blurringthelinespodcast.com, where we'll have cross references and beer links to the things that we drank tonight and other things too, right? And with that, we hit the big red button.
Big red button.